Cool. So thank you for coming to this session. My name is Laurent Bugnon. I'm a cloud developer advocate, and I'm going to talk to you about, that's a really long title. It's not my title. Marketing wrote that. I call that Azure Functions and Xamarin, way easier. So we are going to do an introduction to Azure Functions. I'm going to show you what serverless is, and then we'll build a client-server application just in 20 minutes using Xamarin Forms running on iOS, Windows, and Android. So first of all, let's ask ourselves, what is serverless? And I'm sure you all heard the old joke. Well, there's actually a server. Okay, so when I came to Microsoft and I said, so why did you call it serverless? Actually, they didn't. It's really a, you know, an effort that came from outside. And then somebody told me, well, actually, it's not serverless. It's like less server. Okay, so that's good. There is less server. In fact, really, the thing is that you don't have the infrastructure headache. You don't have to worry about the server. Microsoft is going to worry about that for you. And also, the good thing is that when you deploy an application on a serverless function application, it's going to scale on demand. What it means is that, for example, if you are a startup and you start with just a few customers, you're going to pay very low fees. But then after that, maybe suddenly you have a promotion and your business is booming. And then, of course, we are going to scale that on demand. You don't have to do anything. And we can run thousands of instances in parallel without you having to do anything. Now, the whole thing is also very cheap to run. If you architect your function application properly, your functions are going to run for a very, very short time. And since you are billed by the time that the function runs, at the end, it's really a fraction of a penny for each event. Okay? We have an anecdote at Microsoft where a customer was coming to our accounting system and said, I'm sure your accounting system is broken because last month we ran billions of events per day, right? And then you billed us $75. And everybody was scared at Microsoft because, oh my God, right? Accounting system broken, it's not good. And they checked it out, and it was actually correct because the functions were running very, very short time, and so it was really fractions of a penny on every run. So when you build a serverless application, you want to have a few things in mind. So first of all, the buzzword is like microservice, okay? So you build very, very small units of computation, and we call them functions. Our competition calls them lambdas, but basically it's kind of the same thing, right? Those small units of computation are going to run in a very independent manner, okay? And they are stateless. So basically, when the function starts, it gets the states, for example, from the URL, from the request, if it's an HTTP trigger. Maybe it can connect to a database and get some data. And then after it's done computing, it just goes back to sleep, okay? Now, it doesn't mean that they cannot communicate together, okay? We have different ways to have services in Azure communicate together. For example, EvenGrid is a good way to have different Azure services communicate with each other. Or we have connectors. For example, you can build some logic apps, and then you can say, okay, I want to do something when I get an email in Gmail, for example, that works. Now, for functions, we talk about triggers. And so you have various triggers who can basically kick the execution of the function. Okay, for example, one trigger is HTTP trigger, and then you can build some HTTP applications, some applications which are triggered by an HTTP request, for example, a get, a put, a post, a delete, etc. Now, there are also other triggers. We'll see that in the demo. Now, the really cool thing with functions is that you can develop, debug, and test them locally in Visual Studio. So I use Visual Studio 17 for Windows. It's kind of my preferred IDE. But you can also use Visual Studio for Mac or Visual Studio Code, which is an open source cross-platform editor that runs on Linux, Windows, and Mac. Okay, and I'll show you that in the demo. Now, with cross-platform application, we like to have APIs that we can call, okay? Because the phone doesn't do much without connecting to a service of some kind. So you will build some serverless APIs. And so what it means is that we are going to use HTTP triggers, okay? We are going to respond to an HTTP request. And typically, we want to build one function per endpoint. So for example, if you build a calculator application, you're going to have one function for the addition, and one function for the subtraction, and then one for the divide, et cetera, et cetera. Now, each of those functions is going to have a separate URL because it's a different endpoint, okay? So that can get a little bit messy, but we have a really cool feature which is called proxies. And so the proxy is going to basically present one URL front to the customer application, okay? And then after that, based on some parameter, it's going to redirect maybe to the add, maybe to the subtract, maybe to the divide. So like this, you have a really clean architecture. Now, another thing which is worth noting is that you can secure those functions quite easily. So you can add SSL so that you have HTTPS, for example, which is really good. And you can also add some authentication providers. Of course, we support Azure AD, okay? But you can also add Google, Facebook, Twitter out of the box. And you can also, of course, add your own custom providers if you want. Okay, so I'm going to show you a demo. And to do the demo, I'm going to jump into the web portal. And so this is the Azure portal. You all know that. This is where you do, where you manage all your resource, all your Azure resources, okay? So now under function application, you can see that I already have some function application. So if I wanted to create a new one, I would go to here to create a resource. And then after that, down there, I have serverless function application. Notice that we have for each of those services some quick start tutorials, so you can get started really easily. And then after that, you will have to enter a few information. For example, a name. The name has to be unique because it is going to be a URL. And then the subscription, then we have resource group, which is basically a grouping of all the resources you're using. For example, it can be the function application itself, but also database system, etc. And then we can run those on Windows, Linux in preview, or Dockerize them. And then you can, after that, deploy the Docker container on the machine or make multiple copies of that if you want to have multiple things like that. We have consumption plan or app service plan. Consumption plan means you're billed only when you run the application, when you run the function. So as I said, it's very cheap. But of course, it's also a little bit difficult to make a budget. So how do you know how much you're going to pay exactly? If you're interested in that, you may want to choose an app service plan instead. And if you already have a website running in Azure on an app service plan, you can actually connect the function application to the same app service plan. And then, of course, at some point, maybe you have to upgrade because you're using all your bandwidth. It can be. But that gives you also a better feeling because you know exactly what you're going to pay every month. Okay, so you can choose. For beginners, I recommend consumption plan because it's really only when you run the function you're going to get billed. Location, storage account, and finally we have application insight. And so this is the analytics. We offer the same level of analytics than for websites. And so you can know who is calling my application, where are they located in the world, etc., etc. Okay, I cheated and I already created a function application. So I'm going to go here and go to my LBXAM sample. You see that it's empty, doesn't have any function right now. So I can click on the plus and it's going to offer me to select to create a new function. So I'm going to take a custom function here. And now you see all the triggers. This is what is going to start the execution of the function. So for example, we have here HTTP trigger. Okay, the function will respond to an HTTP request. We have one which I love, it's a timer trigger. Basically, you deploy it to Azure and then it's going to do something on the schedule, for example, every 5 minutes, maybe every hour, or maybe one thing which is really cool, every Friday evening at 11 p.m., like you can run some reports, for example, at the end of the week for your firm. And this is going to run independently. We have things like blob trigger. For example, a blob is a binary large object. So basically, it's like a video, a picture, maybe some PDF files. You can upload them to a storage on Azure. And then every time a new blob is created, the function will run. And for example, you can extract, I don't know, geolocation information for your pictures or maybe tag the video, et cetera, et cetera. We also have IoT Hub, for example. Okay, so you can connect. If you have an IoT hub in your house or in your building, you can connect that to a function and run maybe analytics or maybe do some actions. We have a whole lot of things. We have webhooks. You can connect to GitHub, for example, and then do something every time somebody commits. Now, in that case, I'm going to choose an HTTP trigger with parameter. So I'm going to click here. And by the way, notice that we have multiple languages as well. We support C#, F#, JavaScript, of course. We also support Java and other languages. Cool, so now I have my function created. I'm going to call that add. Oh, sorry, let's call that say hello, rather. We are going to do another sample first. And then I'm going to set the authorization level to anonymous, which means that anybody can call my function. It's just a URL. Of course, you can also protect your function more, for example, with a code if you prefer. Now I'm going to create the function. And it's going to take just a couple of seconds to be created. And it's going to give me code directly in the web browser. And so the first thing I want to understand when I have my function here is how do I get the parameter? So you see I have here something which is called name, okay? I'm going to make that a little bit bigger so that people can see it. So how do I get this name here? Well, the thing is that it is actually going to be extracted from the URL by the function runtime. So if I go under integrate here, you will see that we have the root down there. And so the root is part of the URL. So for example, I'm going to call that say hello, and then I'm going to have the name parameter here. And then with those squiggly brackets, what the function runtime is going to do is extract this value from the URL and give it to my function. It does it automatically. OK. Cool. So now I can save this. Let's go back to say hello. And when I have the code, then I can start coding directly in the web browser. Now, of course, for production, I wouldn't necessarily do that. Okay, but as a way to quickly start, it's a great way. So for example, I can say, let's go here and say hello from build and then the name. Now I'm going to save. And since this is an HTTP request, an HTTP trigger, I can go and get the function URL here. Let's copy that. The function is already running and deployed, right? I didn't do anything. I'm going to go here to a new web browser. And you see that I have here, as part of the URL, I have the name. And here I can enter my name, for example. Voila. And then if I click OK, after a very short wait, we see hello from build Laurent. So basically, my function is running just like you would expect. Here I'm simply transmitting a simple string, okay, HTTP, hypertext transport protocol. So it's text. But of course, I could very easily also transmit some JSON. And in fact, this is what we are going to do now. Good. So like I said, in the web browser, it's cool to try things out. But of course, after a while, it gets a little bit limited. So this is when typically we change to Visual Studio. I like Visual Studio 17 for Windows. And here I can go and create a new project. And because I have the Azure runtime, the Azure workload installed, I have here Azure functions. And so I can create a new function. For example, LB calculator. OK, I'm just going to check. No, that's correct. Yes. Here we go. And now it's going to create the function. I need to select an HTTP a trigger. In that case, I'm going to take HTTP trigger. And by the way, notice that I'm choosing here version 2. So this is a .NET Core runtime, which means that I can also deploy my function on Windows or on Linux if I want. I said I wanted. Voila. And then after that, here, this particular function doesn't need any storage. But if I wanted to, I could also have a storage account, for example, for a database, etc. I'm going to say OK. It's going to create the function for me. And then when it's done, we can start coding. So the first thing we want to do is change the name of the function. I said I want to do an addition in that case. The squigglies are going to disappear. It's just because the NuGet packages are getting refreshed by Visual Studio. Actually, it's done already. So I'm going to show here the add name. And then to configure this function, we are simply going to use here an attribute. So the authorization level is function, which means that there is a code in the URL. And then I can select the method that I want to support. In that case, I'm only supporting get. So I'm going to remove the post completely. And then I can add a root. So just like before, this is part of the URL. So in that case, I say this function is called add. And then slash, and then I will have one number, and then the number itself with squiggly. So basically, the function runtime is going to extract those from the URL and give them to me. Then I will have the second number. I did not say number 2. I want to clarify that. And then after that, I add the second number. And so this is all part of my URL. Now, how do I access those things, those parameters? Well, basically, I'm just going to define them in the signature of the function. So here, I will add int num1 and then int num2. And because I define them as integer, the function runtime is going to automatically convert those strings from the URL into numbers for my benefit. OK, I'm going to delete this. And then instead, I'm going to add a body here. And so as you see, I'm using here an object that I'm going to return. So what is going to happen? Basically, before I was just returning a string. Now I'm returning the object itself. So first of all, let's define this object in a new file. So now I have this class, which is created. I'm returning the result of the operation, but I'm also returning the datetime on the server, because why not? OK, it's just because I want to have a complex object. And so basically what's going to happen here is that when I return the OK object result, I'm going to return HTTP 200 saying it's OK. And then I'm going to automatically serialize this object to JSON using JSON.NET. Now, you could choose XML if you prefer, but in that case, by default, it's JSON. OK, now how do you test that? Well, the really cool thing is that you can put a breakpoint here. And then I'm going to just start the application directly in Visual Studio. And then it will start the function runtime. Now, this is not a simulation. This is the actual runtime, which is running in Azure, except that now it's running locally on my surface. Now, I can go and take this test URL here, copy that. Let's go back into the web browser, paste that. And then again, you see I have the route that I defined. So let's say that I want the first number to be 12, and then the second number to be 30. And then if I press OK, I'm going to jump into Visual Studio, and now I can debug locally. Everything is local, OK? So I'm going to press F10. I can inspect my result. Let's see if everything is fine. The result is 42, which is exactly what you would expect. And that's, of course, correct, because it's the answer to life, the universe, and everything. And then I'm going to press F5. And now if I go back to my web browser, you see that now I have some JSON, which is written. So that's great. Cool. So now I want to deploy this function. And so to deploy it, my colleagues who work in DevOps would tell you, OK, you need to do some scripts. And they are correct, right? You want to have a pipeline, continuous integration, et cetera. But of course, when you are just testing, you can also simply go here. And my colleague Damien Brady is turning. He's really not happy right now. But you can publish from here and basically just publish to Azure directly. That would work. Now, of course, I did that already. So if I go here to this portal, you see I have the LB calculator that we just saw. And I have the add function. And by the way, in that case, you don't see here any code because I publish from Visual Studio. So everything is read-only. If I want to make change, I have to go back to Visual Studio. But since it is still an HTTP trigger, I do have a URL. So I'm going to copy that URL. And then I'm going to go back to Visual Studio. And now we are going to worry about the client, okay? Because I said I wanted to build a client-server application. So I still have exactly 2 minutes and 30 seconds to build the client. That should be a little bit tight, but OK. Cool. So in Xamarin Forms, we build one application. And then this application is going to run on Android, iOS, and Windows. And the UI that we'll build once is going to be rendered with native controls on the platform, having a native look and feel. So here I'm going to remove this XAML. And then I'm going to add some UI instead. And so what we do here is that we have a stack layout. So we are stacking things below each other. Then I have an entry for the first number. I have an entry for the second number. I have a button. And then I have the result, which will be shown in a label. Then I'm going to go into the code behind. And so the first thing I need the URL. So I'm going to place the URL that I just copied from the web browser inside here. And by the way, notice that I do have the root here. OK, this is the root that I defined. Then after that, we are going to place the event handler for the button. And then we are going to say, OK, when this button is clicked, first of all, I'm going to try to parse the first number and the second number because I want to make sure that the user actually entered some numbers. It's just validation, OK? If not, I show an alert. If everything's OK, I'm going to execute things here in a try-catch. And then the actual operation is going to be here. I'm going to take the URL, replace the first number in the URL with the first number, the second number with the second one. I'm going to take an HTTP client, which I need to add to my application right now. And then I'm going to get the JSON using an await operation, using an asynchronous operation. Once this is done, I'm going to deserialize this JSON using, again, JSON.NET. And then I'm going to want to get an addition result. Now, this file, I added it to my server application. Okay, in a production app, I would have a class library. And I would share this class library with .NET Standard, for example, between my server and my client application. Like this, I define my entities once only. In that case, we are going to keep things simple. I'm just going to right-click, add existing item. And then I'm just going to search for the file that I just added. This is the one. And add it as a link. But like I said, in a real live scenario, we would use a class library for that, of course. OK, so now we are ready. The last thing I need to do here is just re-enable my button, because I disabled the button when I send the asynchronous request just to have a better user experience. And now we are ready to run. So at this point, I could go and deploy to the Android emulator. Here, actually, I did that already. So if I go here, this is my Android emulator. I'm going to click here. This is the application. And now I can enter 12 and 30, click on Add. And after a short wait, we should see that the result is 42 like expected. Here we go. And of course, I have the same application on Windows. So I can click 12 and 30. And I even have the application on iOS. So I'm going to show you my iOS device, if I can do that directly here. Voilà. OK, so now I have my iOS device mirrored. Of course, I could use a simulator if I wanted as well. This is the application. And same thing as before, I can add. Let's try to trick it. Let's try to trick it this way and say 32 instead. Add, and after a short wait, we should see the result, 44 this time, which is correct. Cool, so I'm at the end of this presentation. Of course, this was a super simple application, but you can imagine how you can extend that with your own code, I hope. And so at the end, you have a resource slide. Everything you need is at this short URL on the right side. So if you want to get the slide, the source code, the repos, everything, this is there. And finally, I want to thank you very much for your attention. Please evaluate the sessions, because your feedback is super important so that we know what we can bring you next time. Thank you so much for coming, and have a great end of build. Thank you. Thank you.